to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hey, hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going good. I'll just have to warn everybody now that Sean's studio is freezing cold, so I'm wearing a jacket, and the jacket makes noise.
Yeah, I don't know why it's chilly here today. I even asked if the furnace was on. I mean, we turned the furnace off, because yeah. You know, it's right there, but...
Yes, yeah, there's just, a furnace in the studio.
Chilly today.
High-class studio. The furnace makes too much noise.
Right. You know when the furnace doesn't make too much noise?
When it's off?
When the air conditioning's on.
Well, it's still the same blower. Oh, it's the flame that would make all the noise then.
Yeah. It's the fire part.
Yeah.
The fire is loud. beautiful day.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a nice week. The temperature's come back up. We're going to dip down on the weekend. But it's
a beautiful day.
A little bit of a sense of a different change in smell outside today going into work.
That's because all the dog poo was melted.
That could be it. But I just thought to myself, it kind of smells a little bit like spring.
Spring is is false spring.
The false spring. It's the half a groundhog spring.
Yeah. Pre-spring, if you will.
Was it Groundhog Day makes spring last... go 6 weeks late or something?
If they see their shadow, you get 6 more weeks of winter.
Yeah.
If they don't see their shadow, you get 6 more weeks of winter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Why are you relying on a rodent?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. And really, somebody's trying to change that. They want to go with, like, you know, cakes or something to determine if spring's going to be late.
Cakes?
Yeah, because they don't like the rodents in captivity.
Well, then don't eat them.
Exactly. Don't eat the rodents.
Don't eat the groundhog if he predicts more snow.
Don't eat the rodents of an unusual size.
So I was down at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show.
Oh, yes.
And people, where's Derek? Derek is at the theater. He went to the theater.
I saw it. It was called Something Rotten. It's really, really good.
Something Rotten?
Something Rotten.
That's Something Rotten, or you just can't remember what it is before
no,
Rotten?
No, it's called Something Rotten.
Okay. Something Rotten.
It's just quickly, it's a more of a modernized show, but it starts off with these two unknown brothers who were alive at the same time as William Shakespeare, and they're play competitors, and William Shakespeare was the rock star of the day. And
Shakespeare.
Yes. Anyway, so these guys were trying to make something new, and they decided this. So this is a modern theme. So it's, hey, let's do something. Let's make a musical. And so anyways, throughout the whole thing, they were slipping in lines from any possible live play musical you could possibly imagine. I recognize most of them. I'm not a theater geek or anything, but it was very clear.
Lies.
But anyways, it was really good. The singing was good. I love live shows. It was really good.
I'm just not big on musicals. Now, I went to see Guildenstern and Rosencrantz Are Dead.
Oh, yeah?
Ariana got me tickets because... You
sounds
know,
familiar.
Merry and Pippin from The Lord of the Rings. But you know what? It was actually quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't go see Cats and Les Mis and all that. I just can't sit there and listen to somebody sing and dance and whatnot. But something like Shakespeare or whatnot, I'll go watch that.
One of my favorite ones growing up was Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Yeah. So where was this theater that you went to?
It's Port Hope. So Port Hope Theater, downtown Port Hope.
Okay.
Historical Port Hope. A lot of old buildings down there. But yeah, it's a fairly small-ish theater, over 100 years old, 150 years old, something like that. I don't know. Anyways, it's really nice. It was and it was a nice show.
Good.
It only opened earlier in the week, so we were one of the first
to see it.
It's very good. It's awesome.
Excellent. Yeah, because I think that's the first time I've heard of you going to theater.
It's Siobhan likes to go and do these things with her family, right?
Right.
So they go.
Oh, so you're family now.
They do a lot of concerts. They do a lot of live shows, and they do a lot of like Ed Mervish productions and whatever downtown. And
yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't go a lot. They all go to concerts all the time.
Why don't you go to concerts?
I'm not a fan of concerts. No. I am going to Joan Jett and...
Blackhearts?
I'm drawing a blank. Anyways, I'm going to a concert in May.
Joan Jett.
Mm-hmm.
And?
She.
Her band or another
No, person? Another guy.
Joan Jett and another guy.
Billy Idol.
Oh, Billy Idol. That's right.
Yeah.
Who's that comedian guy that's on YouTube? He's been doing commercials.
He did the commercial for it.
Commercials for that.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Billy Idol apparently back in the day used to put on an awesome concert.
Mm-hmm.
That he was.
I've never been to one, but yeah.
You want to go see Billy Idol?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah,
in May.
But now, well, it's too late now.
I'm sure it'll still be good.
Oh, I'm sure.
I like I was telling people, I'm going to Billy Idol. I'm sure my dreams will be broken because I've never saw him live until now when he's old and can barely sing anymore.
Right.
His range is very limited.
It's a nice day for a white wedding. I think I got all his albums.
Yeah?
Yeah. Him and Iggy Pop, baby.
Yeah.
They were it back in the day. good. Well, get your culture into you anyway. Get some of that there culture into you.
That's culture? Billy Idol's culture?
Well, that and, yeah, pop culture. And get into the theater.
Yeah, theater.
That's a little bit of, it's going to the theater. Yeah, it's nice to go to those things once in a while. Just something out of the... But see, when it comes to live music, like I like going to the bars and seeing... like live music.
Oh, there. Small venue.
Small venues, yeah.
Small venue live bands.
As much as I love going to, you know, like Metallica or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Because I got a bunch of people I know that are in the punk music scene.
Okay, yeah.
So I'll go watch them. And it's just like in a small venue.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Excellent. Well, while you were out doing the gallivanting in the theater, I was down at Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show.
Yes. How did that go?
It was the same as every other year. No, it was good.
Yep.
Yep. I went Saturday and Sunday. Saturday's always the look around, quick look around, mm-hmm. see people you haven't seen in a while, meet some new people and, you know, get the meet and greets and everything out of the way. I did my presentation on Saturday and then Sunday I went back and it's slower, more in-depth. You stock and there's not as many people so you can stop and have more in-depth conversations with like the canoe people and the gear people and that sort of stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
And you're not feeling like you're tying them up while somebody's standing behind you going, dude, I got questions about that stick stove. Can you like move it along? You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Exactly what you mean.
They changed the layout a bit this year. So I've always performed or presented on the paddling adventures and paddling stage.
Yep.
And that's usually right out in the main floor.
Yeah.
And guys like Kevin Callan are always in the big room doing the Adventures in Canada stage.
Yes.
And when I was looking at the, I think there's a lot of people on the Adventures in Canada stage that could be on the paddling stage as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of like paddling and trips and stuff like that on the adventure stage, Canada
stage.
Yeah.
So in the separate room, they seem to be the bigger crowd.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and so the one when you're in the middle of the venue, it seems to be, they expect it to be for the smaller crowds, but I've been there when it's like standing room only and they're like 20, 30 people deep and it's like, we need a bigger venue for this one.
Yeah. Well, this year they switched them.
Okay.
So the Adventures and Paddling stage was the big room.
Okay.
And it was holding about 150 people.
And you were in there?
I was in the big room.
Nice.
I was in the big boy room now. I'm on the big boy table. Yeah. So they just switched the two, but they did, like, it was sort of on, it used to be on the, if you're looking down the hall, it was sort of on the left-hand side of the hall.
Yeah.
Well, this year it was on the right-hand side. Yeah. So they just moved a couple of things to the left, to the right, that sort of thing. Moved a little bit around to, but nothing major.
Yeah, they're always, I remember them, there's always some minor changes. There's new vendors and some vendors stop going and yada, yada, yada. I remember one year it was this whole Asian tourist something where there was like China, Taiwan, and
yeah, China was there again.
Yeah.
Well, we went there hoping to see Japan.
Okay.
Nothing. They weren't? Oh. No, just China.
Mm-hmm.
So, I will say that there was still some U.S. locations there.
Yeah.
And there was people going up and talking to them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, there's all the travel places and stuff like that that take up, you know, like maybe a quarter of the, just a couple of rows.
Yeah.
But then everything else seems to be wilderness, camping, outdoors, yeah, that sort of stuff. The electric bike section was massive.
They are becoming more and more popular.
And I'm walking by, and the guy goes, "Yeah, you want that one for about $1,600, but if you want a couple things extra on it, you can buy this one here for like $1,950."
Hmm.
$2,000 for a bicycle, electric bike. I'm gonna buy a used motorcycle at that point.
So you're going to judge me.
Oh, hang on. Let me find a judging hat. You bought one, didn't you?
I do not have an electric bike, but would have been about 2008, 2009. I bought the frame special. I had it shipped in from the States, Canfield Brothers frame, full suspension. And then I took it to, had it delivered to, no, it delivered to me. I dropped it off at a bike shop and had them build the bike for me with full XTR, this, that, the other components. And it was about $4,500. I still have it. It's a nice bike.
I traded an old guitar for a $2,000 mountain bike. I paid like $20 for the guitar. Yeah.
It was back in the day, I used to do a lot more mountain biking, but I had a couple wipeouts, dislocated shoulder and stuff like that. And I kind of lost interest.
Oh, I didn't worry about all of that. I just was, I thought this is going to be cool, get through.
Yeah.
But I found I preferred to walk the trails than ride them super fast.
I love doing the fast stuff. We used to go to my favorite places was like Bromont, Quebec, and been to Blue Mountain a few times for the summer trails. And so I used to do a lot of that stuff back in the day, but my body just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, rock climbing was my deal.
Yeah.
Rock climbing was my gig.
I did rock climbing too. Yeah. Mountaineering, rock climbing, took a couple of courses out west. I did that too.
Canmore was the place.
It was. West. I've been to Canmore.
Mike from Canmore. Yeah, Canmore was the place to go.
Yamnuska.
Yeah. And out here, we got Nemo, Rattlesnake Point, and all that on the other side.
Yeah. Well, they got the big wall in Yamnuska, but they also, the company called Yamnuska for mountaineering training. So I took a couple of mountain safety courses and rescue courses. And I did a 5-day climbing course. And I was all into all that stuff a long time ago.
Like when you were younger?
Yes, when I was in my 30s.
Yes. Oh, I started when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah, I started late. I was busy with, I used to be in the Navy, right?
In the Navy.
Yeah, so I didn't get it. But it wasn't a lot of time to do a lot of the extra things, but I did do a lot of mountaineering hiking back in the day when I was in the Navy. So I did a lot of hiking in the mountains on Vancouver Island.
Yeah. No, it's long time ago. I think I still have my climbing gear in the closet there.
I still have mine. Yeah.
It's just stuff you buy you're never going to get rid of.
Yeah. Right? My climbing shoes don't fit anymore. Your feet keep growing.
What? Not mine.
I used to be, I used to wear a 7.5-8 climbing shoe, 8.5-9 sneaker. And now I'm starting to wear size 9.5-10 shoes.
Ah, fat feet.
No, they're not fat. They're just spreading out.
Look at that guy with the fat feet.
I used to also.
These shoes make my feet look fat.
Back in the day when I did all this stuff, I used to be like a 28, 30 waist, and now I'm a 36 waist.
Oh, that's just the donuts, buddy.
But no, I'm all bone on the hips. My extra weight is all in the belly.
It's all in my belly and my feet. I got bone on these hips.
Yeah. Yeah, it used to be a consistent 182, 184. Not that anymore.
No. I was going to go down to my original weight, but 8.9 wasn't not feasible. 8 pounds, 9 ounces ain't feasible.
Oh, the only way I'm going to make that weight again, my birth weight, is I'll have to be a bag of cremation dust.
Hey, see? There you go.
Then I'll be back to my fighting weight.
Then you'll be back to your fighting weight. Anyway, there was a lot of electric bikes there this year, like a massive section of them. But yeah, a lot of the same exhibitors as previous years. I didn't see the gutter people there. I may have totally missed them.
What? Oh, the gutters. Yeah, there's always gutter people selling.
But there was a whole bunch of other crap. But
yeah.
But
Zaleo, was Zaleo back again?
Nope, didn't see them.
Oh, no.
Didn't see Spot. Hmm. Parks Canada was back.
Okay.
But I think they were there last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there was foodstuffs and pots and pans. They did have the big demo pool there again.
Okay.
Wilderness Tours. They do the whitewater rafting.
Okay.
They had the big whitewater raft there. They always have the big blue whitewater raft. And they put it in there a couple of times in the day over the weekend. And one of the demo sessions is called Family Rafting for Kids. And they get a bunch of the kids that are around from the audience watching, give them a PFD, and put them in the raft.
Okay.
And then one of the guides goes out, and he's telling them. And of course, there's somebody standing on the side with a microphone saying, and here's what they're going to do now, and here's what they're showing, and here's what the kids are going to do.
Surprise us!
Yeah. And... I don't know who owns that little kid in the front. He's about to get a paddle upside the head. But no, so when he's okay, now watch. This is how they work together as a team to turn the raft, and then the guy that's in the boat with them is telling them, "You guys paddle this way. You guys paddle this way," and the whole raft in the middle of the pool just turns.
Nice.
And they go forward and they go backwards and all this stuff. But the kids are looking, just having an absolute blast.
Oh, it would be, eh?
Right? So, you know, and that's like, yeah, every kid I saw in the raft looked like they were just having a blast. And it's a great way to get the kids interested in paddling. And if the parents are into it, then there's going to be a lot of people heading out on the water this year to do some whitewater rafting. Because, I mean, that's how it starts, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, you just get out there and, oh, they had fun doing that. Can we go do that for real this summer?
Mm-hmm.
And then they realize that it's not a pool and it's white water and there's rocks and there's drowning involved. And, oh.
The water's cold.
The water's
it's
cold.
It's not planned. It's not.
Can we get out here?
Yeah.
There was kayak and canoe demos as well. And again, it's cool to see some of the experienced paddlers put on a show in the pool. Like they do the rolls. Yep. They're doing the turning in the... in the middle of the pool, and mm-hmm. they're saying, you know, they're watching how their pool, their kayak paddle goes in a sort of like a C arc.
Yeah.
And they're doing it slowly because if you do it too fast, you're going to gain forward momentum.
Yeah.
And then you do the other one, and you slowly turn right on the spot as opposed to trying to do a big loop like I always do because, you know, I'm a much better canoe paddler than a kayak paddler. But again, everybody's sitting there watching, and sometimes it sparks that interest in people thinking, hey, I bet I could do that. Mm-hmm. And they go and take a course, and they realize, yes, you can do that. So it's cool to see that. There were some new people there as well. I found this one, Campa, C-A-M-P-A. It was three girls that had just launched this company, Gear Rental for Camping. And it's free delivery within the GTA. But they have, like, one of the thing packets they have is Solo Explorer. Basically, it's $100 a night, offers solo adventures or first-time campers who need all the essentials to camp. So you can give them $100 and they'll deliver, it's $100 a night, minimum 2 nights, but you can rent it for longer, of course.
Yeah.
One tent, one sleeping bag, one sleeping pad, a cooler, a pillow, a coffee maker, axe, stove, headlamp, tarp, multi-tool, food prep set, foldable chair, one set of pots, pans, and a kettle, one plates, bowls, and utensils, and a propane stove. So basically everything you need to go out for a weekend camping trip,
mm-hmm.
right? If you want to go canoe tripping, then canoe's on your own dime. But they'll also rent just the tent, sleeping pad, and a sleeping pillow. So basically they were saying, if you got a buddy that's going, you know, out for a few days and you want to go with to try it out, you can get just the essentials and then go with. Because they're going to have all the cooking stuff already and all that, right?
Yeah.
So you just need a tent, sleeping bag, sleeping pad, and a pillow. And then you bring your own clothes. So they'll rent that sort of thing as well. And they got packages for one person, two people, three people, four people.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of deal. It sounds like a really cool idea.
It is a neat idea. And so they... Wait. I'm going to re-explain some of what you said. But I'm visualizing people coming in from another country. Like you hear a lot about Europeans, Germans, people from Britain. They come over here, and it's like, you're not going to fly with this stuff. You can't fly with, like, camp stoves and whatever.
A lot of them go to outfitters.
Yeah, outfitters.
But right.
They have these complete packages. So there's what looks like, so the essential packages is like, you're going to basically be doing car camping.
Yeah.
Or a little bit more glamping, but backcountry. It depends on what your abilities are. And then there's that's the comfort package. So then there's the essentials, which is just the basics.
Mm-hmm.
It's just tents and bags and just what you need, and you have your own stuff. So it's neat the way they've set it up, but I just can't help but think do they have a gigantic garage or a warehouse or something?
That I don't know, but...
Can you imagine gearing up and thinking, okay, what if we have this many people? Well, we're gonna have to be able to have in stock like 30 axes and 40 camp stoves and you know, mm-hmm. all the maintenance and stuff that goes along with it.
If it's successful, they'll just keep adding up.
Yeah.
And, yes. You know, maybe they've already got a whole bunch of stuff that has been donated or
it's
whatever.
Very
right?
neat. It's a very neat business idea. Now, normally you'd have an outfitter like AO or a Golf One Outfitter or something who would supply this stuff.
Yeah. If you're going to a place where there is an outfitter.
Exactly.
There's not always, if you're not going to Algonquin, you want to stick closer to Toronto,
mm-hmm.
and there's no outfitter, then you go to them, you grab your gear, and then you camp somewhere close by.
Exactly.
Right? Because there's not always a big outfitter to supply everything nearby. So if this is right in Toronto, then that's awesome. Hopefully it takes off.
Yeah.
Rentcampa.com, R-E-N-T, Campa, C-A-M-P-A.com. Go check them out and see what they're offering. But it sounds pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You get people out there. And
and
that's the whole thing. I found a lot of that. And it's funny because I'll talk about my presentation in a minute. But I found there was a lot of booths that I visited and talking to people who their big concern is getting people outdoors. Getting them into the backcountry, getting them in nature in general.
Their concern or their goal? Their goal,
Well, goal, concern. They're concerned about getting it done.
It's a driving concern.
It's an
overriding concern. It's
got
to get people out there.
I talked to Wabakimi Outfitters and Friends of Wabakimi. Had chats with them while I was there.
At the show, yes.
Wabakimi seems to me, in my opinion, the next logical step for people after Temagami. Because the people that used to go to Algonquin Park tend to be heading to...
Bigger and better.
Killarney, Temagami. And you're starting to get north of that. That seems to be the next logical step is head up towards Thunder Bay and... get into Wabakimi.
Yeah.
You can paddle in, take the train in, fly in. There's a lot of options on how to get into there and get out. Now, a friend of ours is supposed to be heading up this summer. You've been there in a group. And we have another friend nearby that lives near me that has done it solo. So I'm thinking at the end of the summer... probably September, if we get the three of you together and have a little chit-chat on tripping in Wabakimi from three different trips, three different perspectives.
Yeah.
I think that'll be kind of cool to do something like that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, because every trip's going to be different, right? I don't think anybody except you guys wimped out because of the bugs and stayed a night in
it was a luxury opportunity. It wasn't bugs. It was It was, they had a spare cabin, so we rented it. We rented a cabin on the start, is the on the day before we went in, and we rented a cabin when we finished.
Wasn't there one in the middle of that trip somewhere?
Oh, yes, there was.
Oh, how conveniently forgotten.
So that one, you are correct. We were escaping the bugs for that. Yes. So the other one, it was like we were packing gear. It's like, hey, do you get a spare cabin? Yeah, we got one. But no, the other one on Whitewater Lake in the center of the universe. And
the bugs were bad.
No, they were incredibly bad. So the outfitter was saying that... like, over the years, there have been lower and lower water levels on mm-hmm. Whitewater Lake. And he explained the whole situation to us, because when we got to him and rented a cabin on the beach there, we said, what's going on with the mosquitoes, the bugs, the black flies? He goes, well, let me explain. So he said that the mosquitoes will, the black flies, mosquitoes and so on will lay eggs, and then it'd be drier the next year, lay eggs at a lower level and lay. So as the water levels are dropping, he said they've had a couple years of drought. And so it's not until all those spots where the eggs were laid are filled back up with high water levels that, and they just all hatch. Like he said, they have it was basically a 10 year hatch. They had enough water that year, rain that year, that they had basically 10 years of larvae that hatched that summer.
Well, didn't your timing just suck?
We hit the place where we're going to camp. It was on a crescent beach, and it was on a sort of an island. And so I remember a bunch of us, we just landed. It's like, okay, let's find some tent pads. Let's see where we can set up. And one of the guys went to go to the bathroom, and I went to go pee. And I didn't go pee. I got into the edge of the woods. And I was covered in bugs. We all ran out of the woods. I jumped right into the water. It's like, no.
And then you pee.
I was like at nose level in the water, looking at all the bugs that had chased me out of the woods. It was crazy. And so we were just like, okay, we need a plan. And we looked across Thunder something, whatever the outfitter was. So we ended up, we found a number for them or a messaging for them. And I had my Zaleo, and I messaged them. I said, is anybody there? Is it open? We paddled across, went to talk to them. And there was, I think we were the only people there at the time, except for this kid who was running the camp. And so by satellite, and I used the Zaleo to send my credit card number, and boom, we had a cabin. So, and they said, well, yeah, hey, with the cabin comes a couple boats. So if you guys want to go fishing. So we had like 12-foot aluminum fishing boats with motors, and we went and ripped around and did some fishing.
Took a vacation from your vacation.
It was a vacation from the vacation.
Yes.
Yes. It was amazing. It was like we had a stove and fridge, and it was.
And then Derek sold his canoe and bought a boat.
No, it was really weird. Like we weren't even expecting it; it just happened. It was just circumstances provided, right? So it was really neat. It was we were right on a beach, in a cabin, backcountry. And so the stoves were propane, the fridges were propane, and he did have a generator that supplied limited power to we had some lighting and hot showers.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were on a canoe trip, you say.
Yeah, it was.
You can see why I don't believe you.
So it was Wabakimi. It was a 10-plus day. It was a 10-day. It was quite a few days in, and so it was just about... I think to get out, we're like another 3 days out from that point. So right in the middle of it, and we was like, oh, this is amazing.
Went in Rome.
It was really nice.
Bunch of whiny babies.
It was wild. Yeah, so we the canoes stayed on the beach, and we went out in the aluminum
save some wear and tear on your
yeah,
boats.
Exactly. Yeah. Caught a lot of fish. Yeah, it was nice.
Well, so in September,
yeah.
If we can, if it all works out, we'll maybe sit down the three of you and record a little thing about Wabakimi and why you should go and the goods, the bads, the things you wish you would have done, that sort of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
There were a number of outfitters and trip planners at the show. There were foreign destination booths, the diving section, like I say, the biking section. There were gear to peruse, lots of gear, including our friends over at Canadian Outdoor Equipment Company, Recreational Barrel Works, outdoor-oriented jet. I found out something about jet boils.
Oh, did you?
Oh, this kind of ticked me off.
They have stoves?
They have stoves. No. So Trace and I just use our jet boil. We got the jet boil flash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enough for two coffees and two oatmeals in the morning.
Okay.
Right? And the guy sold me the little thing you put on top so you can cook on top of it with a frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what I do, everything just burns the minute I put that frying pan on. So I was sitting there looking at I asked him if he could get the bigger sumo pot because it holds more, like almost 2 liters instead of 1 liter of water. And he goes, no, it doesn't fit on. You've got to buy the whole thing. You can't just buy the pot.
Yeah.
You got to buy the burner and everything. And because it's a different, you know, type of burner in that. I said, what do you mean? So apparently there are 3 categories of jet boils.
Okay.
The fast boil, the precision cook, and the base camp. The reason, and I talked to the guy, he said, like, everything I put on that frying pan just burns. There's nothing I can do. Oh, well, you can't cook on that. It's just for boiling water.
It's high heat. It doesn't have a simmer.
It's just, well, you turn it down low.
Yeah.
Right? You can turn it down low.
But it just still produces so much heat.
But, well, that's the thing. And he goes, no, dude should not have sold you that. Because you cannot cook on the one you've got.
Yeah.
You need the next model up, which is another, like, I'm not spending, like, another $200 bucks.
They're expensive, eh?
So it's like, yeah, you know, whatever. Anyway, I didn't realize that. Nobody said anything to me when I was looking at the jet boils. I was looking for, you know, at the time saying, oh, that's something different than bringing my MSR Whisper Light all the time. And, I mean, the majority of the time I'm just cooking over the fire anyway, right? Like 9 times out of 10. So, yeah, I was not aware of that. So learn something new for sure.
I
you had that maple one.
So I do have the maple one, and it works really well. I bought a second one because the first one broke.
Yeah.
But for any of them, when I do fry on them or like I have a pan on them, I found I can't even remember where I found it, but it's a simmer plate. It's just a round corrugated type sheet of metal with a little wire stand that sits on it in holes. And so the heat hits the plate and the plate turns red hot. And so basically it transfers the heat from the plate. So it's not direct heat onto the frying pan. So it's because I always get frustrated because if you're making a freeze dried something or like I use Sidekicks a lot.
Right.
And so you have to simmer for about 7 or 8 minutes after it's boiled. And you can't simmer on a lot of stoves unless you have some kind of simmer plate to deflect the heat. So it's basically low. And there's not too many stoves that I used to have a Peak One Coleman stove. That thing was amazing. It simmered, it did all kinds of stuff, and eventually it broke after so many years of use, right? And you can't get it anymore. And so now with a simmer plate, I'm able to just, I can make my Sidekick pastas and rices.
You have to send me a picture of that.
The Peak One?
No, the simmer
plate. Simmer plate. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
See if I can go pick one up and see if it works on the jet boil.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't cook often on the, I mean, so when I know when we're going out on a long trip and there's a chance we're going to have to cook over a stove, I will bring my Whisper Light still. Yeah. But if I don't have to bring 2 stoves, why am I going to bring 2 stoves?
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that was just a little educational thingy I found out.
Yeah, I never knew that either. That's
Fast boil, precision cook, and base camp.
So fast boil is basically what I have. I've got a jet boil and a maple whatever, and the one I have is a fast boil for.
Yeah.
And so it does. It boils water in like less than 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And so I must have the fast boil one. But so did he show you what the difference is? Like the precision cook is just, it's simmerable?
Yeah, it's got a more simmer function on it.
A lower setting.
Yeah.
And so the base camp is just a larger stove.
Yeah, so that's, you're just sitting at base camp. You take that set it up and you're good to go. And it's all the sections that.
And it's bigger.
Yeah. Big, big, bigger.
So you could cook for like four to six people type thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So, I did not know that.
Yeah. Now you know.
Yeah. I just thought they had the jet boil. I just thought jet boil was jet boil. It's like,
I thought the bottoms were all the same.
Yeah, I thought so
and
too.
And they're just different size pots.
That's why I went to ask,
can I just buy a bigger pot?
And yeah. Huh.
Nope, you can't buy a bigger pot.
Yeah, no. It comes as a
up yours, man. Halliburton Paddle Shop and Badger Paddles were there. Always nice wood paddles. Swift Canoe and Kayak were there, so was H2O, the Organic Boat Shop, Frontenac Outfitters, so definitely no shortage of paddle craft to check out. Just some of the nicest, lightest boats. Right. There were some good presentations. Kevin Callan did a couple of presentations. He also went on stage with Tim from Canadian Outdoor Equipment Company. I'm looking at my notes here, and I sure can't spell Canadian.
I added
an extra A in there.
I was avoiding saying anything.
That's the silent A.
Canadian.
Canadian.
Yeah, it's not unusual. You misspell stuff a lot.
Yeah, I do on purpose, just see if you're paying attention. Canadian Equipment Company and Magnus from Trangia Stoves.
Oh, okay.
And they did a cook-off. They did a couple of times, so a Friday and Saturday. Not really sure who won, but it was a lot of fun.
What do you mean a cook-off? What were they cooking?
So the three of them, I'm not sure what they were cooking. I missed all of them.
They just boiled water?
No. They were actually cooking food, like a meal.
Frying up some eggs?
Yeah, on the Trangia stoves.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess they had people judge who had the best meal.
Who had the best technique? Who had the best food?
There's a lot of joking and whatnot going on. Tim usually wins stuff like that when him and Kevin do the food thingies, but Magnus may have won these ones. But like I say, with Tim says everybody's a winner. So come on.
Trangia, is that an alcohol stove?
Yeah,
I had to look it up.
Yep, nice little stoves. They're popular.
Mm-hmm.
Trey popular. Hap Wilson had a couple good presentations. I watched his one on the Hayes River on Sunday morning, and that was pretty good. Camper Christina talked about camping with a bear and capsizing on a trip. Ben Stacy talked about filming your paddling adventures while you're out there and use some of the examples from when we did the TV show there. Then there's a number of people talking about trips they'd done or places you can go, like paddling in the Yukon, that sort of stuff. The YouTubers that show up to talk about their trips they filmed, and so they got lots of footage to show, and it looks pretty cool. Nice variety of subject matter this year. Then some guy talked about why we need to get out and paddle in and with nature and the importance of waterway stewardship. I think his talk was the best one I attended.
It was the best one you attended.
It was the best one I attended.
Not the best one there, but the best one that you attended.
Yeah, yeah. Because, well, I can't judge all of them. Out of all the ones that I attended, that was the best one.
What was
handsome fella, too.
What was the name of the talk?
Paddle Like the Moose Are Watching.
Paddle Like the Moose Are Watching. That sounds familiar. I remember helping somebody edit some notes for something labeled that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Awesome fella.
Yeah.
An awesome fella. I hear next weekend at the Quiet Adventure Symposium, he's giving that speech again.
Do the same thing.
Yeah. It's going to be that presentation down there again.
In the footsteps of fools.
Right. And.
So if anybody doesn't catch on, he was talking about his own talk.
It was my own talk. Yes. They asked me if I can fill a spot down there and do my presentation. Yep. I said, sure, not a problem. And they said, here's the time you're going to be on and you're going to be in this room. And, oh, okay, who else is speaking in the other five rooms while I'm on? Or the other four rooms, because I think there's five. Kevin Callan. Why?
Have you ever seen one of his things?
I did, because he was on just before me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He put a little video out there, and I said, yeah, you're my opening act. Way to go, Kevin. Good job, buddy. You're going places, kid. Yeah. It just, for some reason, we're always on at the same time. So I never get to see his presentation. Or at the Quiet Adventure Symposium, we're always recording in our booth.
Yeah.
So I don't get to see any of the stuff there either,
exactly.
Right? All in all, at the end of the day, 2 days, well, 3 days, but the 2 days I was down at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show, good time. Mm-hmm. Good time was had. Tracy came with me on the Saturday.
Okay, right on.
Bought some stuff. And
did she watch your talk?
Yes.
She wasted her time, did she?
She did. She sat at the front and yelled out, "What a load of crap!" I think she tried throwing a few things at me.
Sean filters his water through a moose.
You know what, though? Like, there was a lot of people that came up afterwards and while I was out on the floor again, and they said, like, that presentation really resonated with them.
Did anybody video it?
I don't know if they did or not. Hmm. I didn't.
I never saw it. I saw the text.
Yeah. But so I just didn't read it all and pretend I'm saying it. Just listen. Pretend it's my voice saying it.
Pretend there's some stupid jokes involved.
Yeah. Yeah. what more do you want? it was nice to get the feedback, and I met a lot of our listeners while I was down there. Okay. Too. A lot of them come up and say, "Hey, listen to your show." Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's always cool.
Yeah.
And actually, I was talking about the project I'm doing this summer, paddling on weekends.
Oh, yes.
And I've talked to a couple of people and I said, "Hey, if you guys have any good paddling areas, send me a message."
Yeah.
And if we go and do that, exactly, we'll drop you a message and say, "Hey,
yeah."
Come paddle
notes from the field, ground source information for people who have favorite areas that are significant, because there's a lot of stuff that we don't know that's out there, because I'm always looking for ideas as well, because there's once in a while you come across somebody and say, "Hey, you ever paddled here? Or this is what you could see." It's like, "I never knew about that place."
Yeah.
And so it's nice when people can come forward and say, "Hey, you've got to paddle this location."
Yeah.
Do it at dusk. Do it at dawn. It's really nice in the rain and whatever, right?
And I've also said, you can come with us, because if things go bad, I'm dragging you down with me.
Exactly.
So that'll be good.
Yeah.
Did you hear about what happened at the Bellagio fountains?
Like the fountains of the Bellagio.
Metro police arrested a man kayaking in the Bellagio fountains during a protest against President Donald Trump. So, I don't know what that has to do with
the
protesting. Several people protested on the Las Vegas Strip as part of a national Not My President's Day rally. Officers arrested Trenton Barnes on charges including trespass and disorderly conduct. Officers saw Barnes in a kayak in the water and holding up a sign. Officers said staff at the Bellagio tried repeatedly to remove him from the water. He eventually paddled toward the edge of the fountains. The officers took him into custody. Because the charges are misdemeanors, the judge released Barnes without having him post bond. It's not immediately clear Wednesday, when it just happened there last week, if police made any other arrests during the protest. The photo from the incident show a man holding up a sign promoting cryptocurrency. Barnes was holding a sign related to the Trump protest.
So this wasn't a spur of the moment thing.
I'm thinking not.
Because you don't have a kayak in your back pocket. Hey, I know what I'll do.
Hey, I'm going down to the Bellagio.
He loaded a kayak on the roof of his car, drove into Vegas.
Yep. If anybody's looking for me, I'm going into town. Why? No reason.
Why are you going downtown with a kayak?
Oh, no reason. No reason. Nothing to see here, folks. Cryptocurrency. Down with Trump.
He was portaging a kayak through downtown Vegas to get to the fountains of the Bellagio.
Oh, you got
to
think he's probably parked at the Bellagio or something. Yeah, or nearby.
What a great opportunity.
Right?
Like, I've been to Vegas, and I've seen the fountains. I've watched the fountains, and I always thought,
is that the one that there's a big show? The big water?
It's a water show.
See, yes. That's what they need to do. Wait till it's on and then launch.
See, the thing is, it could also be very dangerous. Those are water cannons that shoot water like 100 feet in the air or something like that.
And?
If you're on top of that,
more the better. What view you would have from way up there in your kayak.
Just flip me over.
You just see things so differently than I do.
I think safety matters here.
Safety third.
But it would be, but so the water isn't that deep. You could, I think, walk it. But you can also see the jets. So it's not like he's going to accidentally be over top of the jets. He's going to be able to navigate around them because you could see them through the water.
And if you land up just perfectly, it may make you just rise like 20 feet
in the
like
air. Riding a wave.
Right? So what's your claim to fame? Once, while at the Bellagio Theater, I, in a kayak, rose 40 feet in the air. You wouldn't have believed it, but I got the pictures.
But it's not a felony. It was just a misdemeanor. I'm okay.
Oh, man. Anyway, I came across that. I just had to.
That's hilarious. Like,
isn't it, though?
Like, he had to have planned that ahead. Like, it would be so fun just planning it. He's probably saying, him and his buddies are probably going,
hold my beer and let's watch this.
Okay, well, you got to sneak a kayak into downtown Vegas. Oh, it's a car with a kayak on the roof. Who's going to notice that? Yeah, but when you're walking down the sidewalk with a paddle and a kayak, people are going to become suspicious. Yeah, well, I'll walk fast.
Don't be suspicious.
The police will be distracted because of the protests. Right. I'll be able to slip into the Bellagio pool. Oh, that's awesome. That'd be a nice paddle. It's a huge, huge. It's like a couple acres of water. Like,
do you know how many places, when you start to think about it, how many places there are in North America that you're not allowed to paddle? Like places like that, like even Central Park.
Yeah,
there's those 10 lakes or whatever it
is. There's a couple that you can paddle. You can rent kayaks or canoes.
Yeah, but in the middle of the night, you're not allowed to.
I'm not American, so I can't remember some of these things, but do you know the Washington Monument and the reflecting pool?
Reflecting pool there?
So you're not allowed in that water. And I saw a video recently. The people were trying to, had skates on, and they were trying to play hockey on, is it called the reflecting pool? What is it? Whatever it's called. It's near the Washington Monument. Anyways, a Black Hawk helicopter whooshed over them and blew them off the ice. And
really?
Get off the ice. You're not allowed on that surface. It's disrespectful and so on, right? So,
but there's a whole bunch of places like the Bellagio Fountain.
Yeah.
But even downtown Toronto, remember we talked about the
heart-shaped pool?
That pool that they got down there now, the guy was in the rubber raft.
Yeah.
There's got to be some Guinness World Book of Records. Most illegal places to paddle.
Exactly.
In the middle of cities.
And there's some that, like, I would never do Niagara Falls.
Yeah. Well, if you did it, you'd only do it once. Well,
hey, chances are only once. I sent you a video of a guy using a pack raft down a giant waterfall. Did you see that I sent today?
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
Well, they waited for all the water to be high.
Yeah, so they waited for high water flow, high CFS, CFM, CF whatever. And so it was like the guy disappeared, but he came out of the bottom of that waterfall in the pack raft, upside right, with his paddle.
Next up, Niagara Falls. He'll do it at least once.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
Yes.
With the focus on increased media visibility moving forward and the long-term goal of winning an Olympic gold medal, the Brazilian Canoeing Federation, CBCA, has taken a significant step towards...
What's the A?
I don't know. Brazilian Canoeing Confederation, CBCA.
Did you misspell it?
Nope. I did not misspell it because it was all through the article. Taking a significant step towards gender equality by establishing the Coordination of Women in Sport. We've been talking about how slowly a lot of water sports are starting to get more, even with prize money at different events.
So, yes.
Becoming equal.
So, equal prize money, equal opportunity, and stuff like that. So, and you're seeing a lot more interest in, like, in various women's sports, like WNBA with Caitlin Clark, like that's just exploded, right?
Yeah. Women's hockey.
Yes.
They got the Women's League now.
Their own league.
Spearheaded by Vice President Luciana Costa, the initiative aims to enhance female representation across various roles in the discipline, including athletes, coaches, referees, and administrators. Key focus of the project is increasing media visibility for women's canoeing at both national and international levels. One of the biggest challenges for women in sport is gender prejudice, which has historically been shaped to be predominantly male space. We want to train, support even more coaches, referees, and managers in canoeing. We will also monitor and report on annual advances in gender equality. In addition to inspiring, empowering, and engaging athletes, our goal is to create a support network for girls and women athletes.
If you want more women in sport, you have to promote it at an early age.
Mm-hmm.
Grab people's interest, see what's available, see what opportunities there are. And the more people that try it for these sports, male or female, you're going to get more and more people competing in them.
Right.
And on a very high level in the sport. And that's what you need. You need to grab kids' interest at a young age and say, oh, this is something I want to do. I want to canoe and kayak. I want to get into this sport. I want to go to the Olympics and do whitewater kayaking, and I want to go to the Olympics and do whatever, right?
Yeah, so, if you're having to do most of it on your own because there's no support.
There's
or
no
anything,
support system.
You're not making it to the
advance.
Level as the rest of the world,
support,
right?
You need a support system. You need the coaches and the training facilities and the monetary support and so on, right?
Reflecting on the challenges she encountered as an athlete, Costa emphasized that the initiative will work to enhance the support and infrastructure available to women at national competitions. Additionally, the group will be instrumental in assisting clubs in creating better conditions to help athletes reach their full potential. The CBCA coordination will align its efforts with the Women in Sports Commission, established by the Brazilian Olympic Committee in 2022. I want to see a Brazilian woman climb the podium and win the long-awaited Olympic medal, Costa added. I want to leave the legacy of dreaming so that dreams never fade and so that each one follows in search of their goals without giving up, no matter how big the obstacle is. So on a sort of selfish level, it's like, let's get all this in there so we can get that medal, or at least get close to getting that Olympic medal.
Exactly.
But I mean, if that's the final goal, but look at all the positives that are putting into place
exactly
all along the way so that they can eventually achieve that goal.
And that's where a lot of sport, when you see some of these successful sports, it's the ecosystem, the monetary ecosystem, where you have all the facilities, the coaches, and the monetary backing and the interest. And without all that massive interest, you're not going to be able to get kids interested in that sport at an mm-hmm. early age. Like, we're starting to see differences and changes in hockey and so on. So, and with what Brazil is doing with women's sport, you're going to see a lot more people. It might take 20 years. It might take 10 years, right? But you're going to see a lot more interest and a lot more women in these competitive Olympic sports at national, international levels, and they're going to be competing on a high level. But you have to start early. You have to start young.
And they got to have the support.
They have to have it.
Yeah.
You have to have it. You have to have the coaching system in place, the facilities, and exactly.
Yeah, you can't do it on your own sort of thing. So.
You can't just hope for people to make it there on their own. Like, people sometimes do make it on their own, but that's very rare and unique.
Yeah. One of the things that we talk about is when we're on long canoe trips that your butt gets sore sitting on seats and whatnot. Crazy Creek Products, a pioneer in portable outdoor seating, is proud to announce the launch of two new products, the Air Lounger and the Canoe 4 Chair. The latest innovations, Crazy Creek continues its mission to provide outdoor enthusiasts with high-performance gear designed for comfort, durability, and convenience. Now, I've seen cheapy versions of these seats. Basically, there's a back, there's a seat part, and there's two little strips that go join the two at the side.
Exactly, yeah.
And so you can sit that on a seat. your canoe seat, and you got a bit of back support, and you got squishiness under your butt.
Yeah, I used to paddle with a guy, Marcus.
Yeah.
So I used to paddle when he. I used to paddle with him years ago. He always had one of those seat things, because he found it more comfortable in the canoe, but also he could lean back a bit and gave him a bit of back support.
And if you're sitting around a campsite or something, you don't have a chair or a log to sit on, so, you throw that on the ground.
Now, I was thinking about this. I wonder how tough these things are. So these air loungers, if you're sitting around the fire and you're sitting on a rock or a stick or something, and it's like pops, it's like, oh, it was supposed to be my chair and my sleeping pad.
See, I wouldn't. Well, So the air lounger is an inflatable 2-in-1 chair and sleep pad that offers versatility for a range of activities, from lounging by the lake to relaxing around the campfire. In chair mode, the air lounger provides a comfortable seating option with customizable cushion layers. For those moments when you want to stretch out and relax, the air lounger transforms into pillow mode, offering the perfect headrest. When it's time for bed, the air lounger unfolds into a 50-inch sleep pad, providing a compact and comfortable sleeping solution. This chair can fully inflate in only 5 breaths, weighs 32 ounces, rolls up to a compact 3-inch diameter.
That's tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me wonder how strong it is.
Yeah. The air lounger builds on the design of and success of the Aircliner, launched in 2024. The Aircliner is the most compact Crazy Creek to date. It's durable. It's made with recycled 420 Denier 210 ripstop nylon. Compact as it rolls to a 2.7-inch diameter or less, weighs 29 ounces. Comes with a 1-year limited warranty.
Hmm.
So that is... So, yeah, it's a chair...
Mm-hmm.
That folds out into a sleeping pad.
Sleeping pad,
so
chair,
you,
pillow.
You have it as a chair in your canoe. Then you have it as a chair while you're sitting eating your shore lunch. And then you fold it out for your afternoon nap. This is the thing to get. Then there's the Canoe 4 chair. It's an update to the iconic Canoe 3. I bet you there's a 2 and a 1 at some point. Trusted by canoe fans across North America and Europe for over 20 years, designed with feedback from customers and retailers, the Canoe 4 chair offers several key improvements, enhancing both comfort and durability. The chair provides a low-profile Crazy Creek wing design, multi-foam layer bottom cushion, drain holes to eliminate puddling. Canoe 4 also has a strap system to securely attach it to any canoe, making it ideal for long days on the water. For ease of transport, the chair folds flat, and the side straps ensure easy storage and portability, allowing for effortless carrying whenever you're, wherever your ventures take you. So if it's sitting on your attached to your seat, then when you go to portage, you can just fold it down to...
Yeah,
you don't even have to remove it, right?
Yeah.
Canoe 4 weighs 36 ounces, and the seat back measures 16.5 inches tall by 15.5 inches wide, while the seat bottom is 10.5 inches deep by 15.5 inches wide.
So they say it's foam-filled? Did they say that?
Yeah.
So this is what sounds like what Marcus used
multi-foam layer foam cushion, bottom cushion. Yeah.
This sounds like
Marcus had.
Yeah.
Both the Air Lounger and Canoe 4 are built to last. Made with PFAS-free water-repellent coating and ripstop nylon. Durable TPU waterproof-coated fabric with welded seams, ensuring it performs in any weather. We're always looking for ways to improve our products to meet needs of our customers, says Carson Bagby, co-owner of Crazy Creek. The Air Lounger and Canoe 4 chair reflect our commitment to innovation and quality. We know that comfort is key for a good outdoor experience, and we're proud to offer 2 new products that provide unmatched versatility, durability, and convenience. Both the Air Lounger and Canoe 4 chair will be available in March 2025. If you want to see more about them and see pictures of what we're talking about, go to crazycreek.com. Check out Air Lounger and canoe 4, the Roman numeral 4, chair. And you can see what they look like there. But yeah, we're talking about those. And as you get older and you get that sore back after paddling all day, something like this where you could just lean back a little bit or, you know, have the not always moving because your butt is sore. You're like, oh man, this is like on the hard canoe seat sort of deal. These look pretty good. I might see if we can find one around here. And if anything, I think it would be the canoe chair that would be getting, because it's foam, it straps to the chair. Mind you, that air, maybe I'll just get both. Which one do you get? Did you get the air lounger or the canoe 4 chair?
I don't know.
Do you want one that turns into a bed? Or do you want one that just comfy on your butt and sticks to your canoe seat? Or you get one that you can turn into a bed while you're paddling. Oh, just fun never ends.
Yeah, I can see the... I'm looking at them on the website now. I can... Ooh. Yeah, the air lounger is completely sold out.
Good luck. For now.
Yeah.
But they're not on sale yet. Like, they're supposed to be available in March.
Yes.
So I wonder if that's just pre-order.
Maybe.
If they're sold out already, they got to be making more, so.
Yeah.
And that's just from Crazy Creek.
Yeah. Cool. Right on.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't think I'm at the point now where I need that. I'm not that old.
If anything, it's just getting padding for your butt.
Well, for either the air lounger or the canoe 4, for sitting around camp, if you don't want to carry like a folding chair or like the any of those ultralight chair like things,
Helinox
you have to build. It's a simple form if you're going to try as light as possible, because you can sit on it in the canoe and around camp. So
And I mean, it's just like 39 ounces sort of deal. It's not that heavy.
Not a lot of weight. You're not adding weight.
No.
So in the foamy one, if you keep it attached to the canoe pretty much, then it's just portages and attached to the canoe. It's not like it's taking up pack weight.
Right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Things that make you go, Exactly. Or things to add to the must-buy list. That's a hard decision, though, which one you get.
Oh, they even have a high-backed canoe chair. It's called the long back.
Yes.
Interesting.
The air cliner.
Yeah.
That sounds grand. Fritz T. Sprandell has died at the age of 80.
What's the segue? How do you segue into this?
I didn't. I just went.
I know.
I just went there. You know what he could use? A chair.
You know, I'm sitting around a camp all day long, or standing and doing work on the camp. My back is killing me. Speaking of
killing me... Fritz T. Sprandell has died at the age of 80. Who, you ask? He wrote the book Adventure on a Dare. In 1970, Fritz Sprandell accepted a dare that he couldn't paddle from a canoe from New York City down the East Coast through the Panama Canal and up to Los Angeles. There was beer involved, I'm sure. Although he had only ever paddled a canoe in summer camp, and was at the time a functioning alcoholic.
Oh, there you go.
He let his capricious nature take over, and he took off with a dime in his pocket, a carton of Camels, and a bottle of whiskey and a six pack of beer. After a series of adventures along the way, he found himself in the Gulf of Mexico, turned around in a storm, and headed for a lighthouse where his canoe was immediately swarmed with Cuban soldiers who took him for a spy and had him incarcerated with members of the Black Panthers. Now, remember, this is back in the 1970s.
This was in 1970.
Right? Now, there was a couple things that... It's hard to find a lot of information on this.
Like, but you got his books. He's got several
books. He's got the book.
Yeah.
But, I mean, outside of the books, you know, sort of like, hey, here's a little biography.
Here's some details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some that say it wasn't a storm. It was he was either hit by a pod of dolphins or whales that knocked him off.
Oh.
Right, and damaged his boat. So that's why he ended up in Cuba. And there's some they said that because he was by himself, yet he had two sleeping bags and two life jackets, and like he had spare things just in case. And there was two seats in the canoe. Then where's the other person you were with?
Yeah.
That's why they figured they were spying. Adventure on a Dare is the first in a series of true life accounts describing Fitzheath Sprandell's journey into himself, in which he discovers his capricious nature and raises questions about the nature of faith. During the course of his adventure, Fritz visits a variety of natural wonders, small towns, fascinating people on a budget of 10 cents, and his own amazing resourcefulness. After overcoming the challenges in the wild, he finds himself in a foreign country, falsely charged with espionage. Then he faces and incredibly survives relatively unscathed a revolutionary tribunal trial in Castro's Cuba. The people he meets, the experiences he encounters, the lessons he learns all become part of him. They form steps in his journey to meaning, although it is a voyage that contains a deeper significance he doesn't fully comprehend while he's traveling. Adventure on a Dare harkens back to the travels of Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, and satiates our irresistible urge to fulfill our dreams of adventure. It explores the theme of personal freedom and challenges the promise of the American dream. There's something for everyone in this story, a travel log with interesting locations, colorful characters who lend drama, adventures in facing nature's wrath alone, and the suspense of a communist courtroom are all elements of this journey. Above else, it is fun and engrossing, a worthwhile escape from everyday life. Other big adventures followed. Longest snowmobile journey in the United States, which earned him a place in the Guinness Book of World Records. And from what I found on that, like, he traveled, like, over 5,000 kilometers across the U.S. and on a snowmobile.
Yeah.
And at times, there was no snow. So, yeah.
He doesn't do things small, does he?
He does not. Another canoe trip mirroring Lewis and Clark's 3,300-mile famous cross-country trek. Fritz T. Sprandell died at the age of 80. What a life he led. So, looking at it, I do the Audible book thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I just bought that book. So I can listen to it. Well, it's only like a 5-hour book. So I can listen to that at a day at work.
So how many books does he have? He has 3 books. One for...
I thought there was 3. One on each of these things. But when you look for his books, there is only the one book.
No, I saw the one for the Skidoo.
Did you see a book?
There's a book.
I didn't see the book on the Skidoo. The only one I've come across, and it's everywhere, is Adventure on a Dare. But, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, this guy does not go small. It's just like, the initial trip, like, I don't even know that they'd let you take a small craft through the...
It was the 70s.
Yeah, maybe it might have been different
back
then.
They'll let you do whatever you want in the 70s. I mean, hey, hippies and all, right? Yeah. Anyway, I just saw that. I'm looking for stuff on paddling. Why does this guy come up?
Yeah.
Wow. Holy smokers. Like this guy. He went through the paddle. But yeah, he didn't actually get that far by the sounds of it. He just got as far as Cuba.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Bond. James Bond.
Oh, exactly.
Fritz T. Sprandell.
Yeah, so I can see he's got this. I'm looking on Amazon. So he's got, some of them are by him, some are ghostwritten. So Doug Kirmerin, along with Sprendel, made the book The Heart of an Adventure. Sprendel wrote Adventure on a Dare as mm-hmm. well. Doug Kirmerin helped him write or ghost wrote The Snowmobiling Across America, a Fritz Sprendel Adventure.
Okay, maybe that's why I wasn't finding it, because it's mm-hmm. with somebody else.
Yeah. So if you look up Doug Kirmerin, it comes up with two other books.
Cool. Yeah. One of the other things I did find was that there are certain people hoping they make that into a movie.
That would be interesting.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a good...
It would be an interesting story. I think it would be portrayed very well on the small screen. I don't know if they would make it...
I don't think it would make it like a big screen.
No, but small screen, definitely.
But definitely, yeah, like a Netflix thing.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be kind of cool to see that kind of movie. But... Anyway.
Very
cool.
Very interesting.
That's all I got this week. You got anything?
I've got nothing to add.
I got nothing. Well, hopefully this mild weather continues for a little bit. And
it's going to drop down to minus 11, minus 12 on the weekend.
Well, hopefully no more snow at least. Because
supposed
right now...
snow Thursday, the day this podcast comes out. But only 4 centimeters.
Yeah, because so much snow...
Mm-hmm.
People are letting their dogs do their business right on the sidewalks and not cleaning up, which is thoroughly disgusting. And if I see anybody doing that, it'll be the last time I see any of it. But Athena goes jumping through the snow, rolls in the snow to flatten it down, and then stands and does her business.
There's only so many spots she can do that in before she starts rolling in her own poo.
Oh, no, on our walks.
Oh, on the walks.
Oh, yeah, when we're walking. She'll go into somebody's lawn and then start rolling around till it flattens it all down. And then she'll stand up, look at you, and then squat.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's, I mean, good plan, dog.
Look at me. I'm about to poo.
My dog is a genius. I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure yet. I'll get back to you on that. Alrighty. Well, if you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all of our episodes there. Easy peasy. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.